What's up, Eagle Country? Thank you so much for tuning in to another edition of Crunch Time presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority for work, sports, and everyday injuries. You can go online to learn more and schedule your next appointment at OrthoSensi.com. That's OrthoCincy.com. As always, I'm your host, Double T Travis, there Monday, March 20th edition of Crunch Time. And this is a national championship edition of Crunch Time. We're going to talk about Mason Paris's win over the weekend. That's probably the top sports headline here in the area. I also had Jacksonville basketball competing at the semi-state level. The EIAC boys basketball conference team, want to talk about that a little bit. A trio of EIAC football stars going to go off to play at the North-South All-Star Classic a little bit later on this year. Recent college commitment. I want to talk a little bit about the NCAA tournaments that are going on, both the men's and women's. Fun time of the year for sports fans, in particular basketball fans. And if there's some time at the end of the show, I want to touch on the Bengals offseason, because I, like maybe many other Bengals fans in the area, I'm ready for football season to start now. I know we still got several months before we actually get that to come to fruition, but I am ready for the orange and black to get back on the football field as soon as possible. But like I said, Mason Paris winning an NCAA national championship over the weekend is the top story in the area as it pertains to hometown sports, maybe just in general. But of course, everyone by now likely knows the story of Mason Paris, Lawrenceburg native that was dominant as a wrestler in high school. Actually went 206-1 over his 4 years in high school, and of course won the three state championships sophomore, junior, and senior year at Lawrenceburg in the heavyweight division. And from there, it was off to the University of Michigan. And I think for most people that followed Mason's journey throughout high school and saw him just continue to mature and get better as a wrestler, get bigger as well, I think the thought there was that he could go on and win a national championship at some point in his college career. And yes, it took him to be a fifth-year senior to accomplish that, but you have to understand some of the great wrestlers that he went up against those first 4 years. Of course, Gable Steveson was the name that's probably top of mind for most people, dominant in his own right, and would go on to win Olympic gold after being a two-time national champ. So with Gable Steveson gone and out of the picture, Mason Paris really became that top guy, head honcho in the heavyweight division. And I think, at least from the outside looking in, as the wrestling season progressed and progressed and progressed, Mason was winning more and more matches. He took over the number one spot as the top ranked wrestler in the heavyweight division. It just seemed like it was going to be his year, and that he was the top heavyweight to contend with at the NCAA tournament, and boy, did he prove that to be right, mowing down the competition throughout the bracket. His first matchup, he wins by major decision, 12-2, goes on into the next round, wins 6-1. He was a 10-1 major decision winner in the semifinals, and then winning 5-1 in the championship matchup on Saturday night in Tulsa, Oklahoma, capping off that undefeated season with a win over Penn State's Greg Kirkfoot. And this was the second time that he'd beat Penn State's main guy at the heavyweight class this month. He defeated that young man in the Big Ten Championship Final as well, and caught a little bit of Mason's post-match interview with ESPN. To sum it up, basically said he's been dreaming about this for a long time, finally got it done, and basically said he went out there, had fun, and did his thing. And we know that when he's doing his thing, he's winning wrestling matches, and he's doing it in dominant fashion. 33-0 this season, 17 wins against ranked opponents, and 10 wins against 8 heavyweight All-Americans. Absolutely phenomenal season from Mason Paris. It is one that will go down in the history books for University of Michigan wrestling. He is the 24th individual national champion in Michigan program history, and his final collegiate record standing at 124-18. Fantastic career. He is a four-time All-American at Michigan, and just can't really say enough good words about Mason and his high school and collegiate career, how he carries himself, great in the classroom. He's always been a star academically. And now it's going to be fun watching what he does next. I mentioned Gable Steveson and what he did following his collegiate career. He went on to win Olympic gold. I don't know if that's something that is in Mason's future, if that's something he wants to pursue. I would imagine it would be if you're a national champion wrestler. The next step is to win Olympic gold, and then you've kind of capped out what you can do. You've reached your ceiling, what you can do at the wrestling level. Winning an Olympic gold medal is the cream of the crop. So if he so chooses to go after that and eventually achieves that goal, that would be absolutely spectacular. I think that goes without saying. But the other thing that could be down the pike for Mason Paris is becoming a sports entertainer. He was a part of that inaugural World Wrestling Entertainment class, NIL, opportunity to train at the Performance Center on Orlando, Florida, and potentially be on your television screen on a Monday or Friday night on Monday Night Raw or Friday Night SmackDown. I myself have been a pro wrestling fan since I was old enough to know what it is, continue to watch it to this day. So if Mason Paris so chooses to become a WWE superstar and has the ability to do that, not only in the ring, but speaking on a microphone and telling a story, I think it would be absolutely awesome to see him in a WWE ring and reaching some big heights there as well. One guy that I looked at when I saw Mason early as a high schooler, I was like, man, if he continues to grow at the rate that he does, get bigger, faster, stronger, goes to college and wins a national championship, who knows, he might be the next Brock Lesnar. And that's a name that might resonate with a lot of people because he is a household name because of his exploits in the WWE and then crossing over to be a UFC heavyweight champion and then coming back to WWE and being an even bigger star there than he was before that. So maybe that's a guy that Mason looks up to and is going to follow in his footsteps a little bit. Whatever he chooses to do, you think that he's going to be successful in whatever that's going to be because he's already shown that athletically and academically. Just got a great head on his shoulders, and we're super proud of Mason winning the NCAA championship. Always awesome to see someone locally making it big and doing some big things, and it was just really cool to see him win the title on Saturday and cap off what has been a fantastic collegiate career. All right, on to our next topic, Indiana High School boys basketball, as Jackson Dell competed at the semi-state level over the weekend, traveled to Washington to play at the Hatchet House on Saturday against Rock Creek Academy. And unfortunately for the Eagles, that's where their road ended this season, a 58-47 loss to Rock Creek. Jacksonville ending their season 18-10. And of course, sectional and regional champions. And I mean, let's be honest, that's an absolutely great run for Jackson Dell, getting to the semi-state level in this new format from the IHSAA. The regional round was a great one for Jackson Dell, winning in dramatic fashion by 2 points over a team that they weren't favored to beat. So upset win in the regional. You go give it your best shot at the semi-state and ran in to a Rock Creek Academy team that is playing their best basketball of the season. And we talked about it a little bit on last week's show that the size of Rock Creek was going to be something that was potentially going to be detrimental to Jackson Dell in this game. And on the backboards, Rock Creek, they were no joke there. They out-rebounded Jackson Dell 44-19. Now, the score ended up being an 11-point win for Rock Creek. Jackson Dell only trailed by 5 at the half. The third quarter, they get outscored 14-9, and then they played dead even, basically 22-21 in the fourth quarter. So Jackson Delch could never really cut into the lead as much as they needed to really threaten this Rock Creek team. But we talked about the 6'11 man in the middle for Rock Creek, Mariel Diaper. They held him to just 3 points, but it was the guard combo of Ladarius Wallace and Kiwan Becko that combined for 37 points for Rock Creek to lead them to victory. For Jackson Dell, they were led by Devin Grieshop with 13 points, Matt Dickman with 12. Their other big scorer, Seth Drockelman, held to 2 points in that game. So again, good effort from Jacksonville in this game. Made four less field goals than Rock Creek and four less free throws. So there's your difference. The rebounding was a big key in that game too. Turnovers, Jacksonville did a good job of taking care of the ball. Only had 10 turnovers, created 18 turnovers for Rock Creek. But the rebounding, giving Rock Creek some additional possessions out there seemed to be the difference to me. And that you had two guards for Rock Creek that combined for 37. Got to have good guard play in a tournament format, certainly. Rock Creek would not win the second game, however, as the semi-state championship went to Indianapolis Lutheran, who knocked off Lagodi in their first semi-state game. So it will be Indianapolis Lutheran with the quote-unquote home game against Southwood in the 1A state championship on Saturday. That is the first game at Gainbridge Fieldhouse at 10:30 Eastern time. The 2A state championship game will follow close to 1 p.m. Fort Wayne Blackhawk Christian will take on Linton Stockton. And then session 2, the 3A state championship game, Northwood versus Garin Catholic. And the 4A state championship game on Saturday night, Kokomo will take on undefeated Ben Davis. So if you're a big basketball fan, you want to go check out some high school basketball state championship games, there are your four matchups at Gainbridge Fieldhouse on Saturday. But want to once again congratulate Jacksonville on a fantastic season, a great experience to go play at the semi-state and at the Hatchet House. Had an opportunity to go there last year on Lawrenceburg, played in the regional. That was my first time there. That is a really cool high school gymnasium. If you ever get a chance to go to Hatchet House to see a game, it is well worth the drive from these parts, particularly if you're watching a local team play at a regional or semi-state level down there. So, yep, great season for Jacksonville. Officially puts an end to the high school basketball season here in the area. There's going to be a lot of postseason accolades coming out with all-state teams, academic all-state, things of that nature, and that is certainly some things that we will talk about on this program moving forward. Speaking of which, the Eastern Indiana Athletic Conference announced their boys basketball all-conference team last week, and congratulations to the co-MVPs, Josh Williams of Connersville and Kai Dyer of Greensburg. Those two young men, if you haven't seen them play before, absolutely fantastic guard play from those two. Great shooters, can get to the basket and score around the rim. Free throw shooting is top-notch as well, so mid-range is good. They're just complete offensive players, do some good things on the defensive end as well. Williams was the conference fifth leading scorer at 15.4 points per game, 56% shooter from the field, and of course helped Connersville to an EIAC championship, going 7-0 in the conference. For Dyer at Greensburg, second leading scorer in the conference, 18.4 points per game, 48% from the field, 45 from 379 from the free throw line, finished his career 2 points shy of the 1,000 mark and a 2-point loss to Scottsburg at the regional. But those two, like I said, fantastic players. They gave teams in the EIAC and across the region and state headaches trying to prepare to stop them. South Dearborn represented well on the all-conference team. Senior Ryan Willoughby and junior Brody Tiki. Willoughby was the leading scorer in the conference at 19.4 points per game and was right there in the mix for the MVP as he received the third most votes, points by the EIAC behind Williams, Dyer, and Cole Pride from Batesville. I thought Ryan was absolutely fantastic this season. Not only the 19 points per game, just the way he plays overall. Been the top defender on this South Dearborn team for probably a couple years, maybe three at this point. He's really advanced his offensive output over the last couple of seasons, and being the main man this year, knowing that the other team was going out of the game each and every night, and he's just always seemed to get his points, whether it was making shots around the basket, getting to the free throw line, or making the occasional three, even though he didn't take a ton of them. I just really like the way he plays the game. Nobody's got a higher motor, it seems to me, at least this past season, than Ryan Willoughby. So Well-deserving of the all-conference nod, and like I said, I thought he was very deserving of being in the MVP conversation as well. For Brody Tiki, a great junior year. He was a top 10 scorer in the conference, close to 12 points per game. Of course, I think when we mention Brody Tiki, everyone thinks about the 10 three-pointers that he made against Greensburg in the regular season, putting up 30 points in that game. But in watching Brody mature over the past couple of years, you know, he got some playing time sparingly as a freshman. He was out there a little bit more last year as a sophomore, and then really took a leadership role as a junior, the second scoring option for Coach Cosgrove's team. But running the show as a point guard, I really like what I've seen out of Brody. He's a great ball handler. We know that he can make the shot from downtown, but being a kind of an undersized guard, he does a really good job of getting in the paint, using his body, and is able to score amongst the trees down there. He's also a good distributor, setting up his teammates for open shots. I think the one thing that we'll see him work on from junior to senior season is working on his mid-range game. If he starts to incorporate some of that, some pull-up jumpers, free throw line extended, or floaters in the lane, that's something that will take his game to the next level. And I think he's pretty good defensively as well. Scrappy player. If you throw the ball down into the post, he's going to be around down there to take that ball as soon as the big guy puts it on the floor. Good on-ball defender as well. So I can't wait to see what he does as a senior next year. For Lawrenceburg, they had a senior-sophomore duo make the all-conference team. Logan Rory's been one of my favorite players to watch over the past couple of seasons. Just kind of an X factor for Lawrenceburg. When he's going good, Lawrenceburg was really tough to beat, and he was really tough to stop. Smooth lefty, good ball handler. When he gets into the paint, he can rise up and score amongst everybody. Great leaping ability, good size. Thought his outside shot improved this season as a senior. He's always been a gifted passer and a willing passer as well. And when you get him in the open court with a head of steam, good luck trying to stop him. I thought he was awesome this season. And then Cooper Bobo, the younger brother of Jackson, who's playing at Hanover College. Cooper, as a sophomore, really good this season, close to 13 points per game. He's got some size, a 6'4 guard, is able to score beyond the arc, but he's really a three-level score. And again, he was a big part of the success of this Tigers team. They've won 20 and 19 games in back-to-back seasons. They have really put themselves on the map as a strong program under Coach Cutter, and I would expect that to continue next year with Bobo again leading the charge as a junior. What kind of leap is he going to take from sophomore to junior, considering he's already had two pretty strong seasons playing varsity basketball as a freshman and sophomore? So the experience is there for Cooper. He's a great scorer. He affects some shots around the rim as a shot blocker, a pretty effective rebounder as well. I think he's a decent playmaker, being able to get guys open for shots, whether he's on the ball or kind of distracting the defense with his movement on offense as well. So well-deserving for those two players. And then another sophomore in the conference, East Central's lone all-conference selection, Carson Pozonka, big-time scorer. He was sixth in the conference, close to 15 points per game. And for Carson, I think there's a lot of good that I've seen out of him as a freshman and sophomore. Certainly has some ability. I've seen him have the ability to get himself to the free throw line, which is a mark of a good scorer. I just think he's going to continue to get better at all aspects of the game in his junior and senior seasons. He should be putting up some pretty monster numbers with all the experience that he has at the varsity level. So this is how it shakes out. The EIAC all-conference team, Josh Williams, Kai Dyer, the co-MVPs, Cole Pride, had the second most votes, and I'm just going to go down from there. Third was Ryan Willoughby. Fourth, Braxton Myers from Connersville. Fifth, Jeter Edwards from Greensburg. Sixth, Brant Ertl from Franklin County. Seventh, Lucas Barron from Connersville. Logan Rohrer follows there at eighth. Carson Pozonka was ninth. Cooper Bobo, 10th. Cade Kaiser, another sophomore at Batesville, was 10th. And Brody Tiki, 11th, rounding out the all-conference team in the EIAC. And, some of those young men going to be back next season and even the season after that. So a lot of talent still left in the EIAC. We're going to take a short 90-second break. When we come back, we'll have second half action of Crunch Time on Eagle Country 99.3. All right, time for the second half of Crunch Time on this March 20th edition, presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Dr. Ron Auer, Dr. Brian Whistle, and Dr. Roman Trimba, located right here in Lawrenceburg, so it's easy to find the orthopedic specialist you need close to home, OrthoSensi.com. That's OrthoCincy.com. Let's talk a little high school football. Yeah, it's maybe a little unusual to talk about this time of the year, but three EIAC football stars been selected to play at the annual IFCA North-South All-Star Football Classic. That game will be played on Friday, July 14th at Decatur Central High School in Indianapolis. It will be South Dearborn wide receiver Austin Ballard teaming up with Lawrenceburg offensive lineman Jacob Pierce and Franklin County defensive end Bryce Hodapp. They're all going to suit up for the South team, and this is going to be a pretty cool experience for those three. They might know each other a little bit from playing against one another the past few years, at least a familiar face on the South team. Austin Ballard, an IFCA Class 3A senior All-State team selection this past December, led the Knights with 55 receptions, 853 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Big play threat, tall receiver, got good speed, and could really high point the football. He's committed to Thomas More University, so this will be an opportunity for him to get out there and mix it up with some really solid players before he gets over to Thomas More, which they got a really good haul of players from Southeastern Indiana with this latest recruiting class. More on that over at EagleCountryOnline.com. Playing on the offensive side of the ball with Austin Ballard will be Jacob Pierce, a key part of the Lawrenceburg Tigers' run to the Class 3A state championship game this past season. That offensive line for the Tigers, they were a power running team this year, 3,400 rushing yards. Jacob Pierce was a big part of that. And tell you what, he played a pretty good middle linebacker as well. Maybe they'll let him go over and play a couple snaps on defense in the North-South game. And then for Bryce Hodapp, what a year he had for Franklin County. He was their second leading tackler, but he had 10.5 sacks, which was the most in the EIAC. So really good coming off the edge and can, you know, obviously impact what the opposing quarterback is doing. So a really good trio from the EIAC going to be taking part in that All-Star Classic in July. They'll have a familiar face on the coaching staff as Kenny Higgins will represent South Dearborn as an assistant coach on the South team. If you want to learn a little bit more about the upcoming North-South All-Star Classic, July 14th, again, Decatur Central High School, all the information about tickets and the full rosters can be found via a link over at EagleCountryOnline.com. Mentioned a student-athlete and a coach from South Dearborn. How about another student-athlete from South Dearborn, softball star senior Corey Cornett, recently signing her letter of intent to play softball at Wilmington College, and she's expected to be one of the Lady Knights' top players this spring, already a three-year letter winner and a two-time All-EIAC selection, so looking to be a four-year letter winner, three-time All-EIAC selection. She hit .500 last year in 99 plate appearances to lead the Lady Knights, was also among the team leaders in RBIs and runs. So this is a young lady that can really get it done at the plate. Not too bad in the pitching circle last year, 4-6 with a 4.91 ERA. She struck out 63 batters over 61 in a third innings pitched. So all around good talent there at South Dearborn for the softball team, looking to lead the Lady Knights this season and in the classroom. Got to give kudos to Corey as well, as she's a three-year scholar award winner. So congratulations to her on her commitment to Wilmington College. And that's not too bad of a trip from these parts, about halfway between here and Columbus, maybe a little more than halfway. But it'll be fairly easy enough for family and friends to get up and see her play softball at the collegiate level. Speaking of the collegiate level, a lot of people having fun watching the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournament. The men into the Sweet 16, and it has really been a crazy tournament. I think that's why they dub it March Madness, because you never know what to expect every year when the bracket comes out, and wouldn't you know it, The craziest of all upsets, a 16 seed defeating a 1 seed for the second time ever. Fairleigh Dickinson knocking off Purdue in the first round, 63-58. This was a shocker. I mean, it really was. I didn't necessarily expect Purdue to make a big run in this tournament. I know they had been the number one team in the nation a couple of different times throughout the season, won the Big Ten tournament and the Big Ten. Like, they're a really good team, but I just never got the sense that they were going to make a deep run and be an actual national championship contender. I had them out in the second round. But they get knocked off by a 16 seed. That's the second time this has happened. Second time in what, I think, about 7 years, I think it was, when Virginia got knocked off by a 16. The good news is, I guess if there is any good news for Purdue fans, Virginia won the national championship the very next season after getting beat by a 16 seed. Purdue's going to bring back a lot of talent. Who knows? Maybe they turn around and win the national title next year. But this was a huge upset for a couple of reasons. One, the 1 versus 16, but also the height difference between these two teams. Everyone knows about Zach Edey, 7'4". He's a monster. He's an awesome post player. Fairleigh Dickinson's their tallest player was 6'6". Their average height was 6'2". So for them to actually be able to beat Purdue the way they did with the type of players that they have, absolutely phenomenal. Hats off to them. And they nearly won their second round matchup against Florida Atlantic. It would have been pretty cool to see them advance into the Sweet 16. But they were ousted after knocking off Purdue. As for the Indiana Hoosiers, Hoosier fans had a little fun with the Purdue fans, it seemed, on social media after the Boilermakers lost to a 16 seed, and Indiana got past their first-round matchup against Kent State. But last night against Miami, just too much firepower for the Hurricanes as they win easily 85-69, knocking IU out of the tournament in the round of 32. I can tell you from what I saw on social media, and I did watch a little bit of the game, fans were not happy about the defensive effort and just the effort in general from the Indiana Hoosiers. But I tell you what, even if they would have advanced, I don't see it going too much further. I didn't see it going too much further for Indiana, considering what region they are in. Number 1 seed Houston is still alive, and then you got Texas and Xavier, the 2 and 3 seeds at the bottom of the bracket. So it was going to be tough for them to get out of the Midwest region, regardless of what happened last night. But Miami's a really good team, and they showed it last night, beating Indiana pretty handedly. I will talk about Xavier here in a second, talking about the teams that are out of the tournament first, because these are just the teams with a regional flair. We got fans of these teams in the area. Of course, a lot of Kentucky fans around here. They got a nice win against Providence in the first round. I thought that was a decent chance for a 6-11 upset. Providence with a young man that used to play at Kentucky that's having a nice season. I thought that would have been a nice story for Providence to get the win, but Kentucky wins in the first round, and then they go on to play Kansas State yesterday in the round of 32. Kansas State, the 3 seed in the East region, and they just made some shots down the stretch where Kentucky didn't. Kentucky couldn't buy a 3. They did have some issues with turnovers throughout that game as well, and both teams really kind of couldn't buy a basket in the first half. The offense got a little bit better in the second half, but Kansas State made some shots when they counted the most. I was at a birthday party yesterday, and a couple people were like, I think this one's coming down to the wire unless one of these teams gets hot in the next, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. And that's about the time Kansas State made a couple threes in a row, extended their lead to 5, and they just basically kept it there for the remainder of the game as Kentucky just couldn't catch up, just trading baskets and free throws late in the game. Another team from Kentucky, Northern Kentucky University, making it into the tournament and was a 16 seed against Houston. Knew that was going to be an uphill battle for them in the first round, but I tell you what, the Norse hung in there with Houston pretty solidly. I thought at halftime, I was like, oh man, they're close. They might have a chance at this. Houston showing that they were just the much better team in the second half, pulling away for the 11-point win. But I thought Northern Kentucky really showed well in that 1-16 matchup against Houston, who very well may go to the Final Four and win the whole thing. They are very, very talented under Kelvin Sampson. And then you got the Xavier Musketeers, who are still alive, off to the Sweet 16. Sean Miller, a year ago today, came back to Xavier for his second stint, and he's got them into the Sweet 16, his first year back. Pretty impressive from Sean Miller. And this was not a necessarily easy route for Xavier. A little bit easier yesterday than it was in the first round. Kennesaw State had them dead to rights, and Xavier makes a comeback, wins the game, and then they took care of Pittsburgh yesterday pretty handedly. But they got a massive matchup coming up in the Sweet 16 against Texas, and if they win that one, they're playing Houston or Miami. Remember, we just talked about this region. It's going to be tough for Xavier to get to the Final Four, but they are certainly talented enough to get there. And I think a lot of people in this area, regardless of your college affiliation, who you root for, if you're looking for a local team to root for, they're the only one left. Beyond that, teams to maybe pull for, I'm looking at Gonzaga. This is a team that I've wanted to win a national championship for a while. Mark Few has run that program beautifully. They play in a smaller conference. They become a solid team that's always in the top 25, top 15, top 10. They've been close a couple times before. I'd really like to see them get it done if Xavier can't get it done. And who knows, maybe those two teams meet in the Final Four. So having fun watching the tournament. Sure, there's going to be some more great games and probably some upsets coming up as well. In the women's tournament, Indiana playing today against Miami. They're a one seed, though, in the women's tournament, looking to avenge that men's loss yesterday, perhaps. Ohio State's playing North Carolina. That's a second-round matchup. Louisville's still alive, taking on Texas today in the second round. And Notre Dame has advanced into the Sweet 16 to take on Maryland. And all those teams very highly seeded. They're between 1 and 5 seed-wise, so those four teams with a regional flair still alive in the women's tournament as it continues on today. I have basically gotten to my allotment of time. Really quickly, wanted to touch on the Bengals offseason. Yes, they have lost the likes of Jesse Bates and Von Bell, their two starting safeties from a year ago. They lost Samaje Perine, backup running back, who really played well this past season. And Hayden Hurst, who was a nice tight end for him on a one-year deal, has moved on as well. But they have done well for themselves in free agency. They make the big splash with Orlando Brown Jr., 4 years, $64 million to be the left tackle. He's a four-time All-Pro, Super Bowl winner with the Kansas City Chiefs, and I think that's a huge get for the Bengals. They also signed Cody Ford, who played with Orlando Brown in college at Oklahoma. He looks to be a backup tackle, probably on the right side, and really right now might be in the running for the starting gig because we don't know what's going to happen with Jonah Williams. He has requested a trade following the signing of Orlando Brown. They've brought back Max Sharping, right guard on a one-year deal, depth piece there. Jermaine Pratt, 3 years, $21 million, returning to be a starting linebacker, and they go out and get Nick Scott, who's going to be one of their new starting safeties, along with last year's first-round pick, Dax Hill, 3 years, $12 million deal, 27 years old, younger than Von Bell, can still play the position similar to Von, moving around, playing in the box, playing deep. That was a Lou Anarumo signing. If Lou Anarumo likes this guy and knows that he can get a lot out of him, then I like it as well. So I like what the Bengals have done so far in the offseason. Need to find a tight end, get some help in the running back room as well, and then looking forward to seeing what they do in next month's NFL draft. So wish I could talk a little bit more about that because I could really talk about Bengals football all day long, but that is the end of the show. It is presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Thank you so much for listening to Crunch Time each and every Monday evening right here at Eagle Country 99.3 and at EagleCountryOnline.com.